don't be afraid to ask and don't have that standardized mind that you Googled that conventional and FHA is the way to go. There's other ways to go and get you into a home without inflating your income.
Welcome to the Making Money Podcast, where we talk about how to make more money, keep more of what you make, and make your money work harder for you. I am your co-host, Benjamin Foss, and before I introduce Paul, I have to say this is not financial advice. Sitting next to me, as always, is the wonderful entrepreneur and business owner, Paul Ng. Paul, how are you today, my friend?
I am doing very well, Ben. Thank you for asking.
Today we have another very special guest, the very lovely Olga Semenov. Olga, welcome to the show. Thank you for coming back.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Yeah. This time without your partner in crime, Lena. But that's because we are focusing on mortgages and loans and some topics related to that. But before we dive into that, we want to dive into our little segment related to mindset and mentality, because it is not enough to just have the right information. We have to have the right mentality around money, around business, and around our interpersonal relationships in order to thrive and find the success that we all want to see. And Olga, the last time you came on with Lena, we talked a little bit about building those business relationships and the importance of the role of generosity in those interpersonal relationships and leading with a giving mindset. And as now that I've worked with you and worked with Lena in purchasing a home, I've seen some of that mentality come through firsthand. So I'd love for you to just take a moment and expound a little bit on sort of what is the genesis of that mindset for you, and how does that play a role in the way that you conduct yourself in business and in life?
So the way I look at it, from day one, when I knew how to understand this world, right? Someone very special to me said, you treat others the way you want to be treated. That stuck with me forever. In every business, in every venture, and anything that I do in life, I don't think I even think about it anymore. So it just comes naturally almost. When you give, you receive. The mentality, I think my mentality is not like, there's a lot of people that I come across and they go, well, I know if I give, I will receive. I think that's a wrong mentality to have. I think it needs to come from the heart. Not thinking about it, not thinking in advance, what will I receive from this relationship? What will I receive if I engage in this business activity? I personally don't have that mindset. I don't even know how to think that way. For me, it's really easy. It's really organic. When I meet someone, I mean, in my industry, I own a few businesses, right? So just in one, in lending, when I meet someone and I want to know everything about that person, that family. Why is it that you want to buy? What are your struggles? What you went through? Why are you renting? Did you ever own? Did your parents ever own? Did you build a family in this previous home? What is it that that is yours, right? So for me, I go very, very deep. I almost get to the level I'm becoming your member of your family. And I want, at that moment, I think there's a lot of teachings out there that says, you know, put your goals together. What you're going to make this month? How you're going to succeed in 5 years? What are your goals? Money, 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 money. I don't go with that mindset. I just want to help, right? If I can get a family into a home, knowing that their rent is expiring or some circumstance, and I'm able to be a little creative and I'm able to teach them something and get them into a home. Gosh, half the time I don't even look into my commissions. You ask me today, what are my commissions? I don't know. I don't care. Because that's just with doing good, it returns. So I know I'm good. I'm blessed. I don't have, I mean, maybe because I'm not struggling and maybe that's a wrong mindset. I don't know, but that's how I was taught. This is how I go in life. Even if I come across somebody who's saying, hey, what do you think about this business? Well, let's talk about it. What is it that you want to gain? I don't ever look at the situation and go, if I teach them too much, will they make more money than I will? Do I give them too much information? Again, like if you have that mind, maybe you should not be having friends. Maybe you should not, you know, interact with people and say, hey, I can help you with your business. Because your mindset is completely wrong. And that's just my perspective on life. That's how I look at things.
I think that's really powerful, you know, and the idea that you could be so at peace with yourself, with your own circumstances, that you can give without having that consideration of, oh, well, what am I going to get back? Are they going to return to me in the same way that I've given to them? You know, not keeping the score, as it were, and not even being like so concerned about, oh, you know, how much are my commissions this month? And, you know, I think it sounds like a much more relaxed and peaceful way to live, you know, compared to, you know, keeping the score all the time and keeping tabs on everything all the time and sort of having that very like money is the central focus. Whereas you're talking about like you're being a lot more relational with your clients, with your coworkers, with other people, with, you know, with Lena and like other people you work with in business. I mean, that seems like a much more peaceful and like lower stress way to conduct yourself in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't stress about that. And it's probably bad to say, because a lot of people may judge and say, how can you not stress about money? Money is money. It's a tool, right? It's a tool that we use to live. But if we monetize everything, if we put money as number one priority, you'll never have money. Absolutely. I mean, my dad is a genius. Back in the day, he was a business owner of multiple businesses back in Russia. Things, you know, changed here in America, but he taught us a lot. One thing he taught us, I will never forget, I stole five rubles from him, right? He knew I took it, and I was trying to hide the fact that I took it. And he taught me a lesson. He said, what did that 5 rubles brought you? I was like, well, I was going to buy something at the market. Do we not buy enough for you? Are you struggling? No, I'm not. I just wanted to have that. Why did you lie about that? Well, I didn't want you to know that I took the money from you, right? And he said really, really something important. He said, never cheat in life. Cheating will not get you anywhere. It may increase your, you know, stability money for a short period of time, but it will destroy you. It is so easy to climb up, but it's much easier to fall down.
Yeah.
And it's a lot more painful to fall down.
Yeah.
So I think that's why I don't have that mindset. I hate planning. I hate budgeting. God, I hate budgeting. I hate the word, you know, what is your goal? My goal, of course, to be successful. My goal, of course, you know, to travel as much as I can. My goal, of course, to put a better food on my table for my kids. It's normal to want those things. But again, I'm not really specifically set money, 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 dollar, 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 right? I don't know how else to stress that. Like, I'm not built that way.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great perspective, and we really appreciate you sharing that. And I love that little story of...
Never, ever stole ever again. I never lied again in my life.
Wow.
And I teach my kids, it is better to say the worst truth than to tell me the sweetest lie, to this day.
I love that quote. That's a great quote.
And that's,
I
think, mine.
We're going to use it.
Yeah. And your dad sounds like a wise man, the way you even approach that, of like getting, instead of just like, no, you don't steal bad, Olga, you know, is more like, no, let's actually think through this and break down the reasoning. And it sounded like it had its intended effect, which was to change behavior.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I'm grateful.
Incredible. Well, transitioning on to not so warm-hearted of a topic, there has been a long-standing expectation ever since the Fed began raising rates in 2022 that once the Fed started to lower rates and inflation was under control, that mortgage rates would follow. We saw the first rate cut in September of 2024, I believe, and a few other cuts have followed for the daily rate. But mortgage rates actually went up.
They skyrocketed, yeah.
What the hell's going on? Can you tell us a little bit about why the Fed lowering rates has not actually affected the mortgage rate to this point?
Yeah, absolutely. I will never forget, I locked a client literally a day before the cut, and he kept being so hesitant and said, hey, I'm not sure. I said, listen, you're getting a great rate. Let's lock it up because tomorrow's not going to be guaranteed. Next day, we get the Fed cut. He calls me. He's like, Olga, 0.5, and we just locked yesterday. Are you kidding me? I said, okay, let's check it. So I was like, so you assume that Feds did 0.5, 50 bibs, right, cut today, that that's going to affect directly your mortgage rate, right? He's like, absolutely, I'm expecting 50 bibs lower today. Well, his rate went up about 0.25% that morning. And he was so furious. I mean, he was grateful that I don't ever push. It is your decision to lock. I mean, you had that experience. I don't ever push. I don't tell you what to do. It is your decision. I can only advise you of what to do. So at the end of the day, of course, he was grateful, but he could not understand why. He's like, I'm just not getting. I said, listen, when Feds cut rates, go log into your savings account. My savings account took a dip this morning because my rate just went down. I was at 4.99. Now I'm 4.25. By today, I'm at 3.5, right? And we've had so many cuts. Like, what the heck? I said, go look into your credit card. If you have HELOC, look into that. If you have a car loan, see what rate today compared to a month ago. So that's what Feds really impact. That's direct impact of when they cut the rate. So technically, the only thing pretty much directly is what each bank lends to each other overnight. And that's what they decide.
That's what they call the daily rate, correct?
Daily rate, yes. Yeah. So that's the only thing that really what they affect in by doing those cuts. Okay. So when they did those cuts, the mortgages went up. Why did the mortgages went up? Well, because mortgages really follow the 10-year treasury. They follow bonds. So we look at bonds daily as lenders. And the higher the bond, the higher the rate. So today the bonds were at 4.5, which is actually great because about 3 days ago they were close to 4.9. So that's what really directly affects the rate. What affects the rate is inflation. And you may say, well, but we've seen inflation going down. Great, it's going down, but it's not down, right? We still have inflation.
Hey everyone, quick break from the show. If you found this information useful, if you think the show is beneficial and helpful, take a moment, like, subscribe, rate the podcast, and pick one or two people from your contacts that you think would benefit from this free information and the knowledge that we're giving you. Send them the link. Let them know that you found the show helpful. It's the only way we're going to grow. We're not paying for ads. We're not doing sponsorships or selling products. We're just here to help you make more money. Thank you so much for listening. And with that, back to the show.
Let's talk about your experiences with buyers who are new and have never experienced the fluctuation of the market per se, and what insight you can give a new home buyer like Ben.
So what I always say, if you're trying to time the market, you will never buy. I have many, many, many clients in my pipeline that are sitting there probably a good 5-7 years right now, that are waiting for rates to come down. They're waiting for market to crash. They're waiting for something to happen where they can time. So they want to time the interest rate. They want to time the perfect time to buy the house price-wise. They want to have no competition. And I said, well, maybe on the moon, maybe we can fly there and maybe we can start building there. And you'll be able to find that perfect match, but it's not going to happen on planet Earth. You're not going to be able to, I mean, what happened when the rate went to 3.5? So when the rate went to 3.5, 2.5, what happened? There were just not enough investors buying bonds, right? So what, our economy was crap. Well, it just went to really deep shit. So government went in and, you know, they purchased those bonds to save the housing market, right? But what happened with those lower rates, we saw huge inflation of pricing. I mean, we saw bidding wars. We saw, what, 22% increase in pricing over 6 to 12 months.
People were doing appraisal gap coverage because they just knew that it's like, oh, we'll give an extra $50,000 down to cover the gap between what it'll appraise at, but because we just want the house.
Well, because the competition was that fierce. It was that bad. And I was in that competition because, you know, I figured, well, the prices are going up. I need to invest money. I need to buy maybe a rental, maybe something, you know, for my kids or for my parents. Something had to be happening. And you get into this mindset, I have to invest, I have to invest. It got to a point where I would offer, I mean, on a $300,000 townhome that was worth $250,000, I was offering $70,000 appraisal gap because I really needed to get it, right? Yeah. To me, that was like, I had to really pull myself out, and I'm grateful to my realtor who actually kind of took me, shook me, and said, are you effing insane? Like, I get it. It's exciting. I get it. You got to invest. But do you understand the gap that you're doing? I mean, I'm grateful there's not many gaps right now, although we are seeing them back. I mean, there's locations that I've seen 50,000 over asking right now. And a lot of people say, well, I don't believe you. Try to get under contract.
Yeah. There's a reason why I bought when I did.
Yeah.
You know, I could see the tide starting to shift.
Yeah.
A little bit. So to kind of recap, we just for our listeners, so we talked a little bit about how what the Fed has been cutting since September is the daily rate, which is not tied to mortgage rates directly. What's tied more directly to mortgage rates is the 10-year Treasury bond yield. Yep. And that has actually increased. One of the things that's interesting that has happened over the last number of months is the yield curve, which had been inverted, uninverted, and it's returned back to flat-ish, somewhat normal. Historically, and Paul and I talked about this about a month or so ago, historically, whenever the yield curve is inverted, we've seen a recession every single time within 18 months. But now it's been over 2 years, and now the yield curve has uninverted. So we're in this like weird territory where historical indicators of recessions are not doing what they historically do, or not predicting it in the way that they historically have. And now we're starting to see like the part of the reason why mortgage rates went up in early January was the December jobs report came out a lot stronger than people were expecting. And so people saw really strong job numbers indicating like the economy's in good shape, inflation being like kind of sticky, and yield went up. Also, there are some political elements to this too. Like there's people that are speculating that some of the new Trump administration policies may lead to more inflation, whether it be due to tariffs, increased government spending. We'll see if this whole Department of Government Efficiency actually is good at what it's supposed to be doing. We will see. But so there's a lot of factors, at least from what I've read, like Wall Street Journal and some other places, that are it's kind of a myriad of factors. But the main thing I wanted to cover, and I'm glad you did a great job explaining it, Olga, was the difference between the daily rate, which is what's making all the headlines, and the actual 10-year Treasury yield, which is what is the actual effect, what's actually affecting the mortgage rates. But one point that you made, kind of going back to Paul's question, talking about like for buyers, like, oh, how does this apply to me? One point you made to me when we were going through the process is like, listen, little fluctuations in rate, like 0.1, 0.2%, like they're not going to change your monthly payment all that much.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking $30, $40, $50, whatever, you know, depends on exactly the loan amount. But I think sometimes people, like, and to your point, you're talking about timing the market and not being super obsessed with that. If you are so obsessing over like tiny little fluctuations in rate, I mean, it, you can kind of make a mountain out of a molehill in a way. I think you made a great point about just like, don't focus on that so much, you know, like,
yeah. I get very passionate. I get a lot of clients. They're so fixated on the number.
Yeah.
And that's always like almost laughable to me. Cause I'm like, oh my gosh, like you're so fixated that I didn't give you. So there was a point, in time in October where FHA was 5.99, right? And the next day it went to 6.125. And I had a client so upset. I was like, oh my God, you don't understand the difference in payment, do you?
There's a psychological barrier around that 6% number, I think.
Yeah. And I was shocked. I was shocked because like I have to sit down and explain. I'm like, oh my God. So another thing, like it's not laughable, but it kind of like bugs my mind. When I talk to my client, not only I don't think I've ever talked about rate. I don't think I've ever talked to you about rate from the beginning. I mean, it's only when we get to the, you know, lock-in situation. But I talk about what is it that you're comfortable with, and I work with that. I obviously see a lot of financials. I see incomes. I see exactly what you qualify. I have people who can qualify for $10,000 payment a month, but they tell me, hey, I'm comfortable with three. That's where we're sticking. We're sticking to that three. And who the hell cares what the rate is? Right. If I can get you to that $3,000 a month that you told me I want to be at, what does it matter?
Yeah. And speaking of rates, I last year learned about a different kind of loan called non-conventional or non-qualifying mortgage, non-QM for short. And this is something that you do a lot of have a lot of specialty in. Tell us a little bit about like what is a non-QM loan and what are some of the differences between that and conventional?
So I'll tell you what conventionals are and then we'll go into non-QM, right? So we have a few conventional options. So we have conventional loan, we have FHA loan, we have USDA loan, and we have VA. Those are the primary loans. And that's what people are familiar with. They do research, they Google it up. Well, FHA, I can do 3.5%. Again, fixating on numbers, right? Conventional, I can do if I'm first-time home buyer, 3% if I qualify with income, but minimum is 5%. So again, this is standardized thinking, set mind. This is what I want because this is what industry is giving me today. They're giving me conventional. If I'm in services, I can do VA. VA is great, but I actually proved a few VA customers the pluses and minuses of that as well. I show minuses and pluses of FHA. I have first-time home buyers who walk in and go, I want FHA. I need FHA. And I'm like, why? When you have 5% down, you have great income, you a paper buyer, why do you want FHA? FHA has such high premium up front that robs you off of your equity, which is mortgage insurance premium. Like sometimes I don't understand. And I really like my passion. I educate people. I tell them, like, I go through in detail. A lot of loan officers don't do that because they don't really, again, want to educate too much. Because then why would you need me if I educate you too much, right? But I have passion. I have passion to educate. I have passion to really show you the path that is the right path for you. So I got into non-QMs probably on my third year in the industry. And I will not forget my first loan was a bank statement loan. I said, oh my God, that's a great program. And my boss is like, find another way to do it. We don't want to broker loans. You don't have control. This is just a mess. There's so much documentation. I'm like, oh my God, I love documentation. Like, give it to me all. So I think I was the first person in our office who, because we do the regular loans, retail, and I was like, I want to do wholesale, right? And a lot of people start just kind of steer away and don't want to have the mess. But I was like, so if I'm going to tell my client who averages gross $1 million, maybe $500,000, and then they find all possible ways with creative CPAs how to write that off and not pay income tax on that, right? And there's legal ways to do so. And I've seen income extremely high, and at the end of the day, they show $50,000 on tax return, and it's all legit, it's all good. Kudos to them, right? Because you have ability to do that in America. And then they come to me to buy and they go, oh my God, Olga, I need to show now, like, I will not take this deduction. I will not take that deduction. I don't want, you know, I need to be able to buy. So I was looking for options. How do we buy without inflating income that should not be inflated in those loans called non-QM, non-qualified mortgages, right? Because they don't qualify by guidelines of regular conventional, regular FHA, regular VA loan. They look outside the box. Does it make sense to do this loan? So again, first loan I started was bank statement. It was really, really amazing. We add up all the income. We did calculations from CPA, a letter explaining, hey, their expense ratio is only 10%, because typically we'll just take straight 50% off, right? And I was able to close people who to this day tell me, Olga, we drove through this neighborhood for years, 10 years minimum, and we dreamt about being in this neighborhood, but we have so many deductions and we felt it's so wrong to leave those deductions on the table. And you taught us how we do not give up our money or inflate our income. And we were able to get this house and we were able to get our kids to this neighborhood. But I didn't have to pay $150,000 income tax bill. So there's quite a bit. With our company, we have, I believe, at least 8 in our books that we have full control of underwriting. So a lot of people are afraid of them because they go, well, you don't underwrite, so it has to go through someone else. I'm kind of scared how it's going to turn out, because it's either yay or nay, really. You never have a guarantee, right? The underwriter can ask for certain things and you go, oh crap, we don't have that. It's a done deal. It's done. With us having it in-house, it's incredible. I mean, I've done your loan in-house.
It was fast too.
It was extremely fast. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people say, well, those type of loans take 30 to 45 days. A lot of realtors get so afraid of them because it's like, well, there's no guarantee. Well, guess what? When I started your loan, it's going to be closed. I guarantee you. I don't ever get you go shopping for a house until I know it's a guarantee to close the loan, you know? Another wonderful, wonderful program that I did. Again, I was discouraged by my boss to do this program. It was asset qualifier. So there's so many people out there that are trust fund baby, that football player. I actually do a loan for one of the football players. There's so many people that just invested the right way at the right time, but they don't have income. And they call us like, well, we can generate income, Olga. I create an income from my trust or from my retirement. And I said, well, if you're going to create an income from your retirement, some of them are non-reversible and you really don't need. So in Colorado, I mean, average income to buy an average home, you got to have $10,000. So if I have
a month.
Yeah. So if I have someone who is, you know, on retirement and they really don't need to take out $10,000 to $12,000 a month, but what I'm going to make them do is create this income that is now irreversible and they have to get that money out.
And now you're paying taxes on it.
And now you're kind of stuck and it's like, oh my gosh, now I created this income that I cannot reverse so I can buy a house. Well, there's other ways to do that. There's specific programs that we have that we qualify your assets. Really, there's three ways that we qualify. It is absolutely amazing. Once I learned how it's qualified, I was like, oh my God, I need to call everyone who owns this much money and wants to buy nowadays. Please do not convert your income, I mean, your retirements, your assets into income that is not really necessary. There's a program that we have, whoever's on 1099s. So that essentially is a sole proprietor. So you got to file your Schedule Cs, or I don't think 1099 would go and S corps or anything like that. They could.
They can actually.
They can.
I advise my clients, if they have self-employment through a Schedule C, convert to an S corp as soon as possible so that you can still use that the following year and move all that income to the S corp and pay a lot less in self-employment tax.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have a program that we just take 1099 income and go from there. We have programs that we go off of ITINs with no other docs, which is wonderful. We have P&Ls, profit and loss statements. So I don't really need anything else from you besides your profit and loss signed by your CPA.
No tax returns or anything?
No tax returns.
Are those interest rates pretty high though, or how?
So what are the interesting thing, a lot of the people think that it is. A lot of people think like, well, average rate today is 7, 7.5, depending on each situation, right? So I get questions. So will my rate be over 10? I just quoted somebody on absolutely no income at 8.7, right? Wow. Yeah. So don't be afraid to ask, and don't have that standardized mind that you Googled that conventional and FHA is the way to go. There's other ways to go and get you into a home without inflating your income, without changing the way you file. I get really hyped up when I see on social media a lot of people in this industry, especially now, advertise or put reels out there. Hey, it's time to file your tax return. Before you do, if you think of buying, please reach out to me so I can tell you how you need to file your tax return. So what I tell my clients, yes, it is time to file your tax return. Do not change anything the way you file. Let's talk other strategies. What can be done? How it can be done? A lot of people think, oh my gosh, do I need to put 25% down? Do I need to put 20% down? Absolutely not. Yes, conventional gives you 5% down payment. We have programs on non-conventional, non-QM loans that allow with 10% down. There's exceptions with many factors that we look at, that we can look and get exception on maybe even lower down payment. But I always compare, and maybe because I do have background in doing income tax, being certified by IRS, understanding what that tax bill will be. Because a lot of people don't understand. They're so fixated of what I need to show, and they do not understand of what I need to pay when I show that.
Yeah, they don't think through all the numbers and all the process. And I want to hit on a point of something that I learned through all this process that really changed my thought process related to non-QM versus conventional, which is that when you are going with the non-QM route, yes, you are going to pay a point to or 1 to 1.5% higher roughly on average than conventional loan. However, if you are putting 5% or 10% down on a conventional loan, you are going to be paying PMI.
You will.
And with non-QM loans, you do not have to pay PMI, is my understanding, or at least with my loan, I didn't have to pay that.
Yes, so non-QM loans, we do not have mortgage insurance on that. And I can testify that I had a client. So mortgage insurance calculated dependent on your credit, directly dependent on your credit. I had a client who was able to make 10% down and wanted to go FHA, which I was like, what? And wanted to try to go conventional.
They probably saw FHA has a lower rate, interest rate.
Right. But when we run numbers and I look at your credit and your mortgage insurance comes back at $800 a month.
What are you saving? Are you saving?
You're not saving anything. You're actually overpaying. So convert to non-QM, you know, do a different loan. I may even save you on your tax bill. Well, not me, but you're definitely saving on your tax bill. And you're saving on your, especially with those that have not so great credit score. I think it's a great way to get away from mortgage insurances.
So the thing that I was going to say in relation to that is, in my case, the difference in interest rate in terms of the payment was offset almost entirely by just removing PMI. And then to your point about the tax bill, not only do I now no longer have to worry about, oh, showing X amount of income and then paying all the extra taxes, et cetera, but now because PMI is not a write-off, but mortgage interest is, switching out that $400, $500, $800, whatever it would be of PMI for interest means that now I'm paying roughly the same amount in monthly payment on the mortgage, but a greater amount of that mortgage payment is write-offable, if that's a word. I'm inventing a new word today, write-offable, is now a deduction. So you kind of win on both sides. You win on the filing side of not having to show more income than you need to, and then you win on having more interest to be able to write off that could potentially grow to be larger than the standard deduction. And I mean, out here in Denver, where home prices are much higher than the interest amount of interest you're paying on those home prices is higher, it's not too hard to offset that standard deduction and go well beyond it.
Yes. And my other point as well, when you do 5%, but then you pay 25% to IRS, you just gave up your money. Yes, you bring in a bit higher down payment on non-QM mortgages, but it is your money. It still stays in your equity. You're not just giving it away. It's not disappearing. It's your freaking money. Like it really hits me, and I don't know how to relate enough to every buyer out there. You work hard for your money. Why are you so easy and willing on giving it away?
Yeah, why give it to Uncle Sam when you can put it into your own home? You know, and then, you know, maybe down the road you do decide, if he's like, oh, well, I want to liquefy that equity. You have opportunities to do that. But once you give it to Uncle Sam, it's gone.
It's gone. You know? It's gone.
So, yeah, and it was really such an awesome process. And, you know, I shopped around a few different places for mortgage rates, and for the non-QM, yours was like by far the best and the fastest. It was like the one individual I went to, it took like almost a week just to say if I was qualified or not. And by time I was able to get an offer in, someone else had snooped in and taken the house away, got under contract because it took so long. And whereas I think for you, it was like the next day or 2 days, something like that.
We had you pre-qualified, I think, within less than 24 hours.
Yeah, it was really fast. Now, maybe, you know, in my case, I was buying like below my means. So I wasn't like, you know, right on that razor's edge, which I think probably helps. But it was an awesome experience. And I definitely highly recommend working with Olga at Cross Country Mortgage.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I think this is a really good instructive experience for you, dear listener, because there are so many different ways to qualify that don't have to go through the conventional. And part of the reason why your conventional mortgage, FHA, VA, etc., are more restrictive and limited is because of Fannie Mae. Because those loans are being packaged together and sold on the secondary mortgage market, and those investors and Fannie Mae create a lot of extra rules and requirements. I, as an appraiser, deal with it all the freaking time. Fannie Mae is adding more restrictions and requirements to what I do, even this year, and changing things because they exist. Like in my mind, Fannie Mae exists for one purpose only, and that's to protect their investors, right? It's the people buying the secondary, the loans on the secondary mortgage market. But when you go non-conventional, you're not under those guidelines anymore because these are loans. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but these are loans that are not being sold off to Fannie Mae. So you're not having to follow like Fannie Mae's guidelines. And that's why there's so much more flexibility on qualifying criteria. It's also why there's a little bit higher interest rate, right? Because there's maybe a little bit more risk
more
on their side.
Loans, yes.
Right. But you get more flexibility and then not having to pay PMI, you end up, I mean, ahead of the game, really.
Yes, I totally agree with that. They are risky loans, but they're so worth it. Do we follow Fannie Freddie guidelines on those? Not to the T. There's still guidelines. There's still standard guidelines. I've brokered a lot of loans. Everybody has their own guidelines, their own overlays, as they call them. The way we look at loans, if it makes sense, we'll do it. So we take every loan one at a time. I mean, we've saved, oh gosh, I can't remember the number, but it's some long, a little over $4 billion in volume of loans that were saved that were not doable by anyone else out there, that saved realtors, that put people into homes. I mean, that's not a very little number.
That's incredible. $4 billion with a B.
Yeah, it's a little over that. Yeah, I can't remember exact number, but it's a bit over $4 billion.
That is incredible. And then do you broker loans in the state of Colorado only?
No, so we're licensed in every state. I am personally licensed now, Colorado, Florida, California, a few other states. But pretty much if you're looking to get a loan in any state of the United States, I will do your loan. I can help you with your loan.
Excellent. Yeah. And Olga has been really was a pleasure to work with. And you know, you're always very responsive and quick and patient with me, as I was an eager beaver, especially the early stages. Like, what about this? What about this? You're like, calm down. We're not there yet.
I know. He was supplying more documents that I needed. I was like, man, stop uploading. For
I was my type A was coming out. But if people want to get a hold of you, what is the best way to do that?
The best way to text me, I am constantly on the phones. If you catch me on the phone, that's amazing. You can text me at 303-408-7057. You can also email me or submit an application. And if we can put that below somewhere.
Yeah, we'll put that in for the email in the description.
Yeah, that, I mean, I do answer. I'm pretty much, I mean, with the new law in Colorado that, what is it, hands-free, I'm a little concerned to have my phone in my hand when I drive nowadays.
Safe. You don't need to be texting and driving.
Yeah. So, but I'm very quickly on responding to people.
Yeah. Excellent. Awesome. Well, Olga, thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And, thank you all for listening. We would love to hear from you, dear audience. We want to hear from you about who you are, what you are interested in. Are you also an entrepreneur, business owner? Are you self-employed? Are you on W-2? And what are your questions for our future guests? We'd love you to reach out to Paul and I. We have our information in the description as well. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you in the next one.